Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Mitch Hodge doing something a little bit different this morning. We got Joel, who has taken the day off. We got Dennis, who has also taken the day off. So you got myself and you got Mitch Hodge, and I've got a bunch of guests joining us. Actually, our first guest is already here. I'm going to bring him on in like 30 seconds here. But before I do that, everyone... All right, Mitch, let's start with some earnings here, and let's just start with Chewy, okay? I want to start there because Chewy is super volatile after-hour session. It is down a smidge, down about a buck from the close. And the numbers were okay, but they talked a little bit about supply chain problems. There is a labor shortage. Obviously, you've all heard about that. So anyway, the earnings per share beat. They made 9 cents per share last quarter versus a 3 cent loss estimate. Their sales beat basically in line, $2.14 versus $2.13 billion. Active customers, about 19.8 million, up 31% year over year. They gave some sales guidance for the year and for the quarter. The Q2 sales guidance came in above estimates. The fiscal year sales guidance came in more or less in line. So like the numbers were fine, but like I said, the biggest takeaway was they talked about supply chain problems. They're sold out of some products and they are having a hard time because of that, and they can't hire people that they want to hire. So anyway, as I said, stock volatile, down about a buck here in the pre-market session. Mitch, your thoughts on Chewy?
Yeah, so it looks like we recovered from this kind of 66.81, or maybe you could say 67 support here. A nice little lift up, but now going to come into this kind of resistance that we're going to run into closer towards 84. 84 is going to be the level that I'd be looking at to kind of get into some resistance today. But it is looking nice. I mean, it has had a good amount of volume this morning, so it's already trading about 9,000 shares. If we look at the hourly, and you can see kind of how this support is holding in pre-market and it's holding kind of that prior resistance. So this is the resistance. This is now the support. Let's see if that support holds into the open. So we're talking about 77.50. If I could see kind of that hold at the open, I would be looking at this one going into the open.
I'm wondering, and Chad, feel free to help me out on this. I haven't observed that much of a relationship between Chewy and GameStop. I would think that there would be some correlation there because they have the Ryan Cohen ties. I know Ryan Cohen is not, he's not the CEO of Chewy anymore. He's just the founder of the company. But I would have thought that I would have assumed that there would have been some sort of correlation between Chewy and GameStop. We'll find out today because GameStop, kept on going down yesterday after its report. Again,
big candle yesterday,
right? Big candle for GameStop. So let's just see how Chewy checks out. I'm curious to see that correlation. And don't worry, guys. I see tickers in chat. We will get to tickers. We got a lot coming here. We got Marcus Heidkotter is going to be on the show at 8:30, I hope, to talk about Ride, Lordstown Motors. We've got Jason Raznick joining us at 8:45 or so. And I've got my man Ryan Faluna, who is a trader extraordinaire, Benzinga Pro master, and he will be on at like 9:15. So we got a big one today. We got a lot of people coming on. I did reach out to Adam Furestine from Stat News, but he couldn't come on today, unfortunately. So we're trying to get him on the show next week. Yogi Bull, did Marcus sell? I don't know. We're going to find out.
We're going to find out.
let's stick with the earnings theme and go to a play here, Dave & Buster's.
Let's do it.
They also reported last night, and they made money. Dave & Buster's was profitable for the first time in what, a year, I think, probably, right?
It looks like one of those buy the rumors, sell the news kind of thing, though, right? Because, I mean, look at that run up right before the earnings.
First time they're profitable since the last quarter of 20. since the April report of last year. Congratulations to them. They made some money on the bottom line. Here are the numbers. Q1 EPS, 40 cents per share versus an estimate of a 16 cent loss. Sales of $265 versus $257 million. Q2 sales guidance coming in well above the estimate. They guided a range of around $340-$345 million versus a $287 million estimate. So they're saying we're going to make more money next quarter or more revenue than the street thought. And, hey, we're back to profitability, guys. We are making money here again. Dave and Buster's, how is the stock doing this morning? I looked, but I don't remember.
Look at that hourly. It's holding pretty well. It even did like a nice dip yesterday. But man, look at that recovery that it did going into the close. So it's looking great. Big price point today, 47. It's at that 46.70. It's tried multiple times to hold 47 above it. And it has like some wicks up there. That's where I'd be paying attention to see the volume come in today. If you see some big volume step up there, could be the buyers taking control.
I want to know in chat, one, if you have gone or planning or would go to a Dave & Buster's since they reopened. Because I don't actually know. Aside from Luke Jacoby, I don't know anyone who actually goes there. You're a Dave & Buster's
guy.
All right.
I like gaming and having a little bit of fun, a little drinking. Yeah. I used to go to this bar in Denver. It's called One Up. But that's like classic arcade games.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind a Dave & Buster's. Why not? Yeah. You know? Okay. Reopening play.
I mean, there's one near me, and I went with Luke years ago. But
did you have a good time?
Oh, sure. Sure.
All right. So then, yeah, you know, it's not something that you maybe go every weekend, but you know, it's definitely what I like about it is that they have an ability to mix to adults too, right?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of kids still go to Dave & Buster's, but adults also go to Dave & Buster's also.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's not like Chuck E. Cheese, you know?
Chuck E. Cheese, they're not still around, right?
They are.
Are they really?
Yeah, they are, man.
I mean, I'm going to look this up.
In the pandemic, you could deliver their pizza.
Wait a minute. I just Googled Chuck E. Cheese location. Holy cow. They are
Chuck E. Cheese, bro. Come on, bro.
Wait a minute.
All right. Let's not get stuck on the Chuck E. Cheese.
I told you guys this is going to be a different show, and I meant it. Hold on a second. All right. I'm in Detroit, Michigan.
This is what happens when you get Money Mitch on pre-market prep. You start looking at Chuck E. Cheese.
I mean, there's several of them near me.
Arcade bars. There you go. My people know about it. Barcade. I like it, Todd.
Yeah.
The barcades, bro. Those are the best.
Yeah, there's a couple of those. Oh, man.
Chuck E. Cheese is for adults, Andrew says.
I haven't been to one in 25 years, but I will have to check one out maybe soon. All right. Someone in chat asked about Snowflake. Why is Snowflake down? They had an investor day yesterday. And here, let me read you some headlines that came out of that. They gave some guidance, basically. They gave some long-term product revenue guidance, like years out. Which like they gave 2029 targets. Just think about that for a second. They gave estimates for 2029. Okay. They also talked about their margins. I guess the margin number was a little bit weaker than people thought. And from what I'm seeing from this analyst, there's still some concerns about the fact that the stock is a really high valuation, or the company is a really high valuation. So wait, is that Snowflake you got up there?
I get it up
there. All right, because yeah, I got
my snow. Is the snow falling or is the snow picking up, man?
So anyway, so Investor Day is the reason why. I'm gonna go back to announcing Investor Days for the week ahead of time. I stopped doing it because there was like so many of them, and I wasn't sure if y'all cared. And a lot of them are inconsequential, but a lot of them are consequential. So every Monday, I'm gonna start just giving you a preview of what's to come for Investor Days. There are a lot. This is the time of year where there's a lot because we're in between earnings season. So anyway, Snowflake is down to 239 this morning. Let's pull up. Is that a daily?
Yeah, daily right here.
Okay, cool. What jumps out to you besides the steady downtrend?
This huge volume on May 27th. What do we have on news there? Do we have anything on news there? May 27th. Look it up.
Yeah.
I'll keep talking about the chart. So this looks like the classic Gil Morales undercut and rally.
We got
you guys have seen him on here on pre-market prep. I give him the shout out because that's who I kind of learned this play even from. And the way he explained it was perfect. You know, a lot of times you get these runs right into kind of the IPO, but then it'll go back down and kind of attack that pricing, get below that. And then you'll see some buyers kind of step up a little bit lower. And then when it comes back towards that level, we want to see a big volume bar kind of step in to show that the drive is really starting. That's kind of what this bar right here shows on that May 27th. That's 17 million shares traded there. So is there any news there, Spencer?
Yeah, they had earnings after hours on the 26th. So
boom,
there you go.
There's a catalyst. You got a catalyst news. What you want to do is now see some follow through. So what do we see since that day, right? We saw a little sideways action, which is actually a good thing, right? I mean, when you get sideways action after earnings, it's kind of people digesting the earnings, right? Like taking it in, figuring out, okay, so where the level's at, what is the stock really evaluated at? And then now you started seeing the push up there towards 255.99. So look for that number to break out today. So that'd be 256. So look for 256 to break out today. That's what I'll be looking if it can get some volume too. Because if you got 17 million shares traded here, on average, I'm seeing about 3 to 4 million shares traded. I would love to see 8 million shares traded today on that breakout.
I just saw this headline come through. McDonald's just disclosed a
Mickey D's.
A data breach. In Asia, I guess in Korea and South Korea and Taiwan, hackers accessed some customer and employee data, but no ransom was paid. Is that
I love that last little bit.
Ransom. I guess that's bullish. This is we had EA yesterday disclose that they had the source code stolen for some game, and we have McDonald's saying we got hacked. We got hacked as well this morning. So there's two hacker headlines in 2 days, man. Bullish cybersecurity.
Yeah, man. This hacker situation is definitely starting to get out of hand. And so for that being said, why don't we take – I just want to take a quick look. How's CrowdStrike doing? I know this stock has been performing well since the pandemic. I mean, if you look at it since the pandemic, I mean, look at that. Look at that chart. But yeah, looking strong today. Look at that. CRWD, strong candle.
Yep.
Internet security. Let's see if the cyber.
I'm pretty sure that's in the whatever ETF. I don't even remember what ETF I own. Jesus. Oh, my God.
You know Spencer. He owns them all.
No, I don't. Wait, hold on a second. I have to look right now because I don't.
Hackers can hack anything these days. I know, man. It's impressive, Jack. I would have to say that too. It's getting out of hand. I mean,
CIBR. That's the one that I own. CIBR.
CIBR.
The First Trust NASDAQ Cybersecurity ETF.
Look at that candle.
There we go.
Very similar candle. So maybe, hey, you, this is how you find plays sometimes. You know, it was a news that wasn't necessarily these stocks, but maybe these stocks actually move off of it and McDonald's doesn't.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, look, my whole thesis was like when I bought it last year was there's going to be a lot more of these headlines. Right. So and typically when we saw, I don't know if this is still the case. I guess it's happening this morning. But historically, every time you saw one of these headlines, oh, big data breach, you know, Sony, whatever, Capital One, right, whatever. Typically, that's when it happened, these stocks would all spike. And I thought, well, if there's going to be more of them, then I should just hop on the train. And I guess it's happening here today. So it is 8:27. We're going to have Marcus Heidkotter on in a couple of minutes. What should we do until then? Let's talk about the cruise stocks for just a second here. Because
cruising?
Yeah, well, RCL is trading down. I feel like we're back to where we were a year ago now when these cruise stocks would all trade down every time there was news that somebody got sick. And that is, I think, what's happening here this morning because there was this headline going around. I guess two people on a Royal Caribbean ship that were sharing a room together tested positive for COVID. And so they're still on the ship. And everybody on board was vaccinated. Everybody over 16 was vaccinated that was on board. And two people tested positive anyway. So that I think is, I suspect is what's hitting RCL here this morning. I didn't look at the other cruise stocks. I know Carnival. Yeah, they're all down. They're all down. I know Carnival also had a headline. They clarified some dates going forward for they're reentering. Yeah, their summer 2021 schedule. But that's not relevant here. I think what's more relevant is the fact that two people got sick on a cruise and the cruise stocks are all trading down. So is this just a buy the dip opportunity or what?
Well, first I want to give the chat a question. You know, sure. Would you go on a cruise? I would absolutely love to hear it. Yeah, you know, put a one if you would go on a cruise. A two if you wouldn't. I know Spencer and I are one. I love my cruises. But another release also on the 9th, Royal Caribbean said that they would charge unvaccinated cruise passengers for tests and different protocols. So it's showing that, I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to probably need to be vaccinated to go on these cruises. So that's a good sign, at least. Or, I mean, there's going to be maybe some unvaccinated people, but they're going to be paying up to get on there. So
yeah,
looks like there's a mix there. I see some ones and twos there.
Let me just put it this way. I survived a trip to Nashville where I didn't wear a mask the entire time and it was just packed everywhere. I think if I survived that, I could easily survive a cruise. And you know, with the vaccine, I feel like Superman, even if that's not the case, I feel like it is. So, anyway, cruise stocks are trading down. I'd be inclined to buy this dip personally. We are in the midst of an uptrend across the board in the sector. So I'd be inclined to buy this dip if it were me.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'll keep a watch. All of them are showing signs of weakness right now. NCLH, CCL, RCL, they're all showing at least hourly big red candles. Let's see if they recover today and going into the market.
I want chat thoughts on this. How are you approaching cruise ships or disease traps? Maybe.
But one of the things that was mentioned to me by a chat member that is usually in our SPACs attack, and Spencer, you can tell me this. What do you think? So he said it best. I mean, the first couple of cruises, isn't that going to be the cleanest the ship has been in forever?
It's a good point. It's a great point. You want to be on the first one, right?
Yeah, the first one. That ship is going to be squeaky clean, man.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Really good point. All right, it is 8:30. Let's bring on, I know you guys have been, you've been asking for this guy for days. You've been clamoring. What did Marcus do? What did Marcus do? And I was saying, I don't know. We'll find out on Friday. Well, here he is, Marcus Heidkotter from Rockwell Trading. His camera's not working, but I promise you he's here. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Great. Yeah, so, I mean, let's talk if I can share my screen. So I thought this morning we'd talk about Alcoa. The symbol is AA. Spend the next 15 minutes here. I'm just kidding. Of course we're going to talk about Ride. I mean,
you had me
to talk about half. Alcoa.
You had me in the first half, Marcus. I'm not going to lie. You had me in the
first half. Alcoa? I was like, steel?
Why not? But by the way, I did sell a put on Alcoa, so I mean, true. So the positions that I'm in right now, I just can quickly show you. Yes, so Alcoa, Camping World, LVS, MU, right? We'll talk about this. X, US Steel, Zillow. So sold puts on all of them, all doing pretty well. But we gotta, of course, talk about Ride, because Ride had this fantastic ride up. So I mean, if you have never, ever listened to the show, which is a huge, huge, huge mistake, and never listened to me, quick recap, 20-second recap. I got into Ride in February. So in February, I sold puts on Ride, got assigned, bought 7,000 shares at $21.50, sold some more puts, bought some more shares, brought my cost basis down to $15.79. And then this week, it is happening. It is happening. It is happening. It is happening. Ride goes all the way up to $15.80. And I know that you're all rooting for me and say, oh,
we are rooting for you. Yes.
No, I'm still in this thing for two reasons. Okay. So let me tell you, first of all, I wasn't in front of my computer when all of this happened.
There was a little key information there.
He's Marcus.
Yeah, no, I mean, I only trade for the first 30 minutes. I like to trade the open, so between 9:30 and 10 o'clock, that's usually my time. I'm not staring and babysitting my trades all day long. And I nobody should, I feel. I mean, I like to live a life, and this is what I do. So first thing, I wasn't in front of the computer. Yeah. And in the afternoon, I'm looking at the close, and I see, oh my gosh, they made a high of 1580. And then they dropped all the way down to $10.80. What the heck is happening here? So, I mean, this is the first reason. The second reason is, as soon as I image position, I'm selling calls. So yes, I did sell the 1550 calls expiring today. Now, these calls, as the stock jumps up, these calls are obviously underwater. I mean, this is just part of the game. So even though the stocks were at break even here, at this point, the calls were down around $12,000, which is no big deal because on expiration, you see, today they expire worthless, absolutely worthless. I rolled them down, by the way, to the 15. So this is why I'm still in the trade. So what did Ride do? I mean, they had great momentum going into they were going up. It was going well. And then they filed the report with the SEC. The report that they need to file and say, yeah, you know what? As we stated in our earnings call, we need cash. We have right now like 500 million or something like this. But by the end of the year, these 500 million will dwindle down to somewhere around 50 to 75 million. And this is by the end of the year. So you guys all ask us, can we survive for a year? No, we cannot. So if we want to survive for a year, we need more money. So nothing new. However, it looked like, oh my gosh, they're going out of business. And this is where the stock plummeted. Now then, two days ago, the highest volume day here, with 56 million shares traded, because there was this rumor we might have an investor. So anybody who is in Ride know that their investor relations is the worst ever. Their communication with the public just plain sucks. So anyhow, this is where they're not communicating. So here is what I think is happening. And I'm not that smart. This is why I wanted to run by you, because you guys usually have all the background information. So I believe they know that they need an investor. In order to get an investor, they needed to file this SEC filing, because any investor would say, dude, if you don't file, they were delinquent on filing this. They had until July 21st, but any investor would say, dude, you gotta file this thing. Otherwise, you're not getting any money. Okay, so this is done. Now they say, okay, maybe there is an investor coming. And the third thing is, they are still sticking by their story that they will produce in September, and they are still doing this Lordstown week. In fact, yesterday, they posted something on Twitter where they said, hey, look at this. We are getting ready. The first Lordstown week is around the corner. We'll go live. And they post a little video here. By the way, I on my YouTube channel, I went on a little rant yesterday, and I do it again. Dear social media manager on Lordstown, if you do have any good news that you would like to tweet, please don't tweet them 30 minutes after the close. Please tweet these things while the markets are open. Anyhow, so this happened after the close. So here's what I'm doing right now. So let me just show you, because, oh, Jesus, not only is the camera not working, there we go. So my break even right now is at 1439. So at this point, I mean, I obviously need to get out of the trade. So I'm selling very aggressively the 14 calls. And let's just jump over there. So I still have a 15 call that is expiring today. So this makes me another $1,000. So that's okay. So this one here, sold it for, yeah, anyhow, sold it for 10 cents, sold 100. So this makes me $1,000. But let's just see what is happening here on Ride for next week. So for next week, right now, the 14 call is selling for, bid ask is 30 over 34. So let's just say 30. So if I sell 100, this would give me another $3,000. $3,000 would bring then my realized gains for Ride. Let me just bring it up here, year to date. From 14,000 and something, where is it? There. To 17,000. And it lowers my cost basis by another 30 cents. So lowering the cost basis by another 30 cents means that I'm getting closer to 14. And honestly, at this point, I'm ready to exit this with a loss. If I can get out with, let's say, a $20,000 loss, I'm okay. Now, here's the deal. The account that I'm trading is it's a $250,000 cash account, $500,000 in margin. So if we just take the $20,000 based on the cash, so this would be a loss of 8%. Okay. Don't like a loss of 8%, but trust me,
This is what I want to know. Right now, how big a portion of your portfolio is this Ryan position?
Oh, that's. Let me show you. It's not a lot. It's not a lot.
Yeah, how much of the buying power is it taking?
Next to nothing. 31,000. It's taking 31,000. Honestly, look at this. All of the other positions that I have. Here's the capital requirements for Alcoa. It's 41,000. For Camping World, it's 41,000. Here, it's 18,000. 27,000 here, right? It's 31,000. It's not eating up a lot of my buying power. I mean, that is not the challenge. It's just that I'm kind of getting sick and tired of talking about it and having it in my portfolio, to be honest. Yeah,
I bet you are.
So, overall, in realized profits, I'm up to $94,000. So probably by the end of the month, I'll have $100,000 in realized profits. So I need to get out of Ryde. And even if I'm selling it at 20... So by the way, this right now, because I already collected so much premium, even though it shows here the unrealized loss on the stock is 51,000, since I collected premium, I'm down 37,000. So even 37,000 right now on a $250,000 cash, it's down like 16%. Yes, that's not nice, but trust me, in the beginning of my trading career, I don't know about you, but I actually made trades that dragged my account down by 50%, 60%. So
here's a silver lining. The silver lining, I guess, is you're going to have a lower tax bill this year.
Oh, gosh. I just talked to my CPA because here in Texas, we have to file by next Tuesday. So by next Tuesday, we have to file. And I'm filing. I just talked to him. I mean, you can buy a really, really, really nice house from the tax bill that I got from last year. So it doesn't matter where I live. It doesn't matter where I live. Even if you live in California, you can buy a nice house from the taxes that I have to pay.
Uncle Sam gets his.
Well, you're going to have a lower one this year, Marcus. Please, please do us all a favor and please cut this.
Just ride out, man.
What else do you want to talk about then on Fridays? Do you really want to talk about Alcoa? I'll be happy to talk about Alcoa.
I have nothing invested in this, and yet I'm emotionally invested in this now, Marcus.
We're all with you.
But please see the bigger picture. See the bigger picture right now. If I would liquidate it right now, it would be for me a 15% loss. That is not the end of my account.
Right.
If I'm getting out with 20,000, that is an 8% loss. I think that, and I mean, this would be the only loss the whole year thus far. So if I'm making $100,000 and if I'm giving back $20,000, of course it sucks, but bigger picture, it's okay. So, and I don't think that they will go bankrupt in the next 2 weeks. So I just need a little pop. We'll see. I think I'm almost certain that by next Friday, I'm out of this one. So let's see.
So next Friday. So that, wait, what's that? That's the 18th. So the week after is their Lordstown week, whatever, right? Investors, analysts, customers, if they exist, whatever, right? You want to be out before that happens. That's what you're saying.
Because I think that this is a kind of buy the rumor, sell the fact. Okay. You see, when they announced the Lordstown week, the stock was jumping up. When they announced a few days ago, hey, we are inviting the whole world, we are doing it virtual, the stock jumped up. And we know this. I mean, you talked about, what stock was it about that you talked about earlier? It's buy the rumor, sell the fact. I believe that investors and analysts will be a little bit underwhelmed on what they see during this week. So I do want to be out before this. This was my plan all along. I'm not gambling and hoping that they wow investors there. I think during Lordstown week, the stock will go down.
What I do like is that even though you haven't sold yet, you're not taking the mindset like I should just diamond hands and eventually I'll get bailed out, because you know that's probably not going to happen, and you know that's just not really how it works. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that even though you haven't sold, your mindset is not I'm never selling.
No. I mean, this is where it's really time to get out. So yeah. The wild card right now is, will they secure funding? And that is a super wild card. When they secure funding, we have seen what happened 2 days ago, where they went from $9 to $12.80 in a matter of minutes just on rumors. So this is here, an almost $4 move on rumors that they might have an investor. So I do believe that they could jump. Are they a long-term, a viable company? I don't know. And I have learned more about Lordstown than I ever cared to know, because we talked about it. This is a long-term investment. Why is this a long-term investment? It's a short-term investment gone bad. Every long-term investment is a short-term investment gone bad, right? And I'm done with this. I don't want to have it any longer. And so I'll see. My break even right now is at 1440. I believe that today we will see a little pop. You see pre-market, we are up at 1074, that I can probably make another $3,000 today, around three, I hope maybe $4,000. We shall see, to bring down my break even to 14. But this means that if I want to get out with a $20,000 loss, all I need is this stock to go up to 12, and we are 1074. So does that sound reasonable that they go to 12? I believe that is possible over the next week.
Okay, let's move on. 15 minutes on Lordstown Motors. Tell us about a winner. I'm sure you had a winner or two. Tell us about something else.
Oh, I've tons of winners here right now. So, for example, I have, we're seriously going back to Alcoa. Let me just show you this.
Steel, I'm
just
baby. Running through them.
Yeah.
So Alcoa sold the strike price of 35. This is working out really great. As long as they stay about 35 today, this will be a nice winner. Camping World sold the strike price of 37.50. If they stay above 37.50, that's fine. They're up this morning to 40.28. So that's a good one here. LVS, I am still in this one. Bought shares at 58, but I already sold so much in premium. I can show you. I'm down on the shares, but this is just this has been a moneymaker. So here, let's just go to LVS. So I sold a bunch of premium, $5,300. Right now, I'm kind of down on the shares, but that's only $4,000 in my account size. This is what, like 2% or something like this. So I'm still up. If I would sell them right now, I would still be up and finish this positive. But I'm selling calls against this. I like LVS here. This is really a nice moneymaker where I can sell calls. What else? MU entered this week, a strike price of 77, as long as they stay above 77. Oh, did I forget? Okay, I'll share my screen. We'll be good. So we are trading at 80 this morning, pre-market. Then we talked about, right? Ex-US Steel sold the 2250 put, so we are doing good here. And Zillow, I sold the 104. So all of these positions, it's just money. And so today is the day where all of these options expire worthless, as you can see. So it's ka-ching. So what will happen here going into the market open? I look for new opportunities for next week, right? So I need to sell some puts for next week. This way, I can already earn money over the weekend when time decay is kicking in.
Yeah, great point. It's an options expiration day. We didn't mention that yet. It's going to add some volatility to the market, I presume. So all right. This time next week, we're going to talk about some new positions.
all right. The saga continues. I mean, I'm getting ready to write a book on Ride.
Hey, you might have to, Marcus, you know what you have to do? You might have to be one of those people that go drive the Lordstown truck.
Yeah, I want to see you in
Ride truck.
I want to see you in Ohio.
Until last week, before they announced this thing that with the SEC filing that they need money, I thought, you know what? It would actually be fun to make $50,000 to $52,000 on this trade. And with this winnings, buy one of these trucks. I thought this would be fun. Right now, it's, abandon ship here. Get off the Royal Caribbean Cruise Line ship.
Well, it went back to port.
There's buying a truck and there's receiving a truck. Those are two very different things.
Truckload either way.
All right, Marcus Heitkotter, he joins us every Friday at 8:30 to talk about his trades. Usually there's winners. We all have a stinker every so often. Here's his link. It's up on the screen right now. RockwellTrading.com/Benzinga to hear more from Marcus. Link is also in the description of the video. Marcus, thank you for the time. Thank you for joining us. And I very, very much look forward to next Friday.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks a lot, Marcus. All right. There's a link up. I'll leave it up there for a second. RockwellTrading.com/Benzinga. I want to bring up this chart that I saw this morning. This is, I believe, from Bank of America. This is a chart of flights to Hawaii, flights from the mainland U.S. to Hawaii over the last few years. You can see, I'd call that an uptrend. That is a big, big, big comeback in flights to Hawaii. I was looking at HA. It's come a long way, Hawaiian Airlines. I just saw this chart, and I wanted to bring it to your attention because I know I'm not the first person to see this, and obviously the Hawaiian Airlines has been on a bit of a run, but I thought it was interesting and I wanted to share. So that's that.
No, definitely. I mean, it's something definitely to share, and it's a trend that I'm going to continue to see, not only Hawaii, but let's just continue to see kind of the flight numbers, right, that get released. I want to see that number start increasing as we're going into July. We should definitely see that number increase.
Yep. Ramon's asking, where is Dennis and Joel? Ramon, rewind the show about a half hour. You'll catch Dennis and Joel abandon us. So that's the story on that. But we're having fun. You got Spencer Israel and Money Mitch Hotch here. We just finished with Marcus. We're going to have Jason Rasnick on in a couple of minutes. He said 8:45, but he lied. That's all right. He'll be on eventually.
Yeah, he'll show up.
He'll show up eventually. Probably. He'll probably show up eventually. That's kind of how we roll here at Benzinga. Mitch, let's talk about for a second. I don't want to spend too long on it, but yeah. This ORPH from yesterday, I think, offered a really, really great lesson in the challenges of trading stocks that have been halted a gajillion times. Okay, so you have the chart. There we go.
I'll go back to the halts.
Right. So here's a chart. You know what? Here, let's just show you here. This is Benzinga Pro. You can look at halts, okay, on Benzinga Pro. We have a feature. We have a tool. It's called Signals. This is the Signals tool. You can filter it by different types of signals, by gaps, by price spikes, by options, or by that little yellowish box there, halts and resumptions, okay? And then you can search for individual stocks, as I did for ORPH. So this is from yesterday, okay? That's and you can see here how many times was ORPH halted on Thursday. The first halt was at 10:50. These are all 5-minute volatility halts. Actually, no, not all of them. Some of them are a little longer. Anyway, how many halts? Let's count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 at 12:30. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23 halts. 23 halts yesterday in this stock. Back to the chart, okay? There it is. Let's pull up a 1-minute chart and let's zoom out. No, let's go back to 15-minute chart. Okay. This offers a great lesson, I think, in it might seem like fun and easy money to try to trade this thing. It went from, what did it go from? 4-3 to 80 or whatever in one day. But that can happen. That being, stock gets halted at what, 56, right? And opens at what? Opens at 23. And there's nothing you can do about it. When we say it's impossible to control your risk, that's what we mean, right? So I thought that was a great lesson in why these things are really, 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 really hard to play and potentially really, really dangerous. Misty, I know you've tried to play this stuff in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I've played Holtz before. I mean, yeah. I played short float stocks before. I mean, if you look at the float, the stock has a at least from what I'm reading here, 24.5 million in the float. So that's really not that much, guys. Anything under that 30 million can really, really start moving if they start pushing volume into it. And so one of the things with this one is I did hear there was kind of a chat room that was in on this, Spencer, just to give us a little insight. There was a chat room in on this that was pushing up.
Okay.
So definitely pay attention to that. Always be careful with that because you can always get caught with like some other chat room pumping the stock. You have no idea when they're getting out because you're not in that chat room, and then you can get caught really fast. So one of the things that I would always say about Holtz, at least in my experience, the first Holt is kind of okay to be in. You kind of never know when you're going to get into that first halt. It just hits. Then you're like, okay. When the stock goes up, usually after that first halt, that's when I usually try to get out, because second halts, yes, can usually continue on its way up. But that third halt, and you look at this in the percentages and you could do the data, a lot of times after that third halt, you're going to get a down halted move.
Yeah.
And a down halted move is really tough to stay in, because when the stock actually reopens, all you're getting is the volume on the opposite side. And so with that being said, sometimes you can get stuck and you have to just start slamming the bid trying to get out. And a lot of times you're going to start seeing your orders slip. And then so you'll get a lot of slippage in a stock like this too. And so this is when you really, really need to respect limit orders. You go and throw a market order at this, you're just asking for trouble. Right, Spencer? I mean,
yeah.
That's how you really get in trouble. A stock like this, you throw a market order, I mean, you can kiss yourself goodbye. You'll end up with a palm face. But definitely, guys, just be careful with stocks like this. I do not mind traders even like looking at stocks like this, because if you're a day trader, I mean, you're looking for momentum, but you always have to respect the risk. And one of the things that the question I always ask myself, what's the ultimate risk for me? Let's say if I got in this stock at 40, the ultimate risk is for it to come all the way back down towards 15. And so you got to understand that downside action could happen to you. If you can take that risk, then okay. But a lot of times if you're going to look at a trade and the positive is maybe 20 points up, but the downside is also 20 points down, that's not a trade at least I want to be a part of, Spencer.
Yeah. Super, super dangerous. Only get in these things if you have a really, really good understanding of, you know, limit orders and reading tape. But even that, I would just stay.
Another thing is, if you have access to dark pool information.
Well, I mean, who here has that?
I mean, I'm just giving you how you got to be able to trade these, because a lot of times you're going to see some dark pool orders on these. If you guys don't know what dark pools are,
yeah,
look them up, guys.
All right, and now everyone's crapping on market orders. Market orders have their value. They're not like you know, they have a purpose. I know.
What do you use a market order for?
What would I use a market order for?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, just
let me think. Well, I mean, I've
you used think they have a purpose?
I've used, not for trading, not for. All right, let me change that. Amend my statement. Don't use them for trading. But if you're like, you have an idea for like an investment. Let's say you're doing some research over the weekend, and you say, "Oh, I found a stock. Whatever. I found an ETF. I want to buy, and I want to buy it now." Then at the open, throw in a market order. And if it's an investment, then do you really care? If you're saying I found a new investment that I'm going to hold for a long period, a year, 2 years, whatever, then do you really care about getting the best price, about getting your price? Because that's all right. This one,
I'm a baby.
Wait, this is what happened to me. Okay, I tried to get cute. I wanted to buy ARKW. Right. This is early last year. This is pre-COVID. Okay. I wanted to buy ARKW, and I was like, all right, throwing out my order. I'm going to get my price. Wait for my price. My price never came. 1 week, 2 weeks, a month. I sort of forgot about it.
You missed it.
I never came. And I was like, screw it. Screw it. Market order. Give me it now. And it worked, because like it had such a huge run after. Not that I knew that was going to happen, but like I don't care about, I don't care what my price was. My price was, so I didn't get the best, my best price. I don't care. I don't care. It wasn't about that for me. It wasn't about that. So I'm just saying, if you're trading, yeah, maybe don't use a marketing order. If you're investing, then they have a purpose. That's all. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, I'm gonna be on the opposite side a little bit. The only time I use a market order is when I need to get out of position. Sometimes if the bids are not happening,
that's awesome.
That's my market out. Sometimes I'll be like, no. If I see negative catalyst and I was in a stock, like let's say like how that ride took a quick move down, right? Those are the type of stocks that I'll just be like, okay, I need to get out. There's a difference. Need and want to get out are two different things, right? Yep. And so I think that's when you can use like maybe a market out. I'd be picking sometimes with my entries, and I understand exactly what you mean, Spencer, when sometimes you're too picky. Next thing you know, you miss the stock rocketing off because you were just trying to get it for 2 cents lower. And really, what were that 2 cents going to do? It was going to be like 0.03 of a percent
exactly.
of a return.
Exactly.
And so I kind of understand that mentality. Yeah. Definitely.
And then Easy Mike said, if you're in a stock with like a tight spread, you know, one cent spread, whatever, then a market order is fine. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The spread matters too.
You're not going to get screwed on a market order in Apple. Right.
Yeah.
You're probably it,
maybe not a market order in AMC.
And it looks like it didn't really do a whole lot the day after. Just trying to gauge that reaction. That's the dailies. It doesn't tell the whole story. Jason Raznick, good morning. Are you buying the Plaid or what? What's the deal?
Yeah. So Plaid went up 10,000 in price a week ago. I'm disappointed in the announcement. I said it. So I interviewed Sandy Monroe, the guy who's like moved the stock and probably the most important guy when it comes to electric, like predictions prices. He's been the most powerful guy. Sandy Monroe, about 3 years ago, added about $40 billion to Tesla's valuation when he called Tesla the only company to do continuous improvement and move at the speed of thought. So every other company does all this work where they're, planning, but Tesla moves at the speed of thought. So Sandy Monroe, probably most important guy to Tesla from an outside perspective. My problem with it, I confronted him on it, is that Tesla used to put the battery, the type of thing on the back, the P performance, and they made a little different variations of these cars. My question to you is, Spencer, what if you got a Plaid? Will someone know you're driving a Plaid?
No.
And that well,
if it came with like a Plaid paint, like coat of paint, then maybe they would, but otherwise they wouldn't.
So Tesla, the Plaid, I'm not excited about how they're marketing it. Do I think it's an amazing car, unbelievable car? Absolutely. Is the engineering behind it unbelievable? Yes. The battery is unbelievable. The engine, the motor is unbelievable, and it will sell. Do I think they need to change how they're pitching it and angling it? Absolutely. There's a reason why Mercedes does, you know, high-end cars, the 500S, the 600S, all that stuff. There's a reason why they do that. And it makes a difference. You differentiate. You guys on an airplane, there's first class, there's coach, there's business class, there's bulkhead. There's a reason why. Yes, Mitch, you can be a little more comfortable in first class, but there's like a separation there. This Tesla Plaid thing is not that. And it doesn't show that differentiation. So that scares me. The other thing is think about when the Tesla shell, the outside of the car, the Model S has been the same thing since 2014, right? And they haven't changed the outside shell of it. That is awesome for a margin perspective. So Tesla's margins on not changing the outside shell of that car are absolutely amazing, right? But no differentiation, no update, no something, you know, then like that also is bad. So I don't know. I think you're going to see immediate sales at a high price point, but it's people that who buy the Plaid, they buy it for branding and presence to say, hey, I have the Plaid. A lot of people do that, and this time they will not be doing that.
Okay. So by and large, you like it, but you're Not in love with the overall plan. Sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not in love with the marketing plan, and I think it's gonna change. You know, I do.
Do you think it was just a focus purely and solely on performance? There was not that much thought process into, like, let's say, the aesthetics of the vehicle.
Well, so remember Battery Day, Mitch?
Mm-hmm.
So Battery Day, they got you know, a bad rap on Battery Day, even though the technology is awesome. Mm-hmm. Tesla isn't good at, like, the aesthetics part of changing the outside of stuff. They're really good at the engineering, and it's the most important thing. The electronics, the hoses, the carburetor, like all that stuff inside it is 7 years ahead of anyone else. It's 7 years. Now, there's some things, guys, that isn't 7 years, but where they are, they're 7 years. It used to be 10 years. It's now 7 years. Let me just tell you something, okay? So say someone's going to buy you a present, right?
Mm-hmm.
And someone said Tesla's doing the Porsche strategy, but there's so many different models of Porsche. If someone got you a Tesla Model S 2018 for $40,000 or 2016, okay, so if someone got you that, or they got you a brand new Plaid 2021 with whatever, you wouldn't know the difference.
The outside would just be the same.
Everything's the same except for the steering wheel is different. The dash is different. The inside is different. Okay. By the way, I'm saying all this stuff because, I mean, I'm really long Tesla. In 2014, I told Spencer Israel that there'll be a Tesla in every parking lot that he goes to. And after the show, he said, Jason, don't say hyperbole on the show. That's never going to happen. And that has happened. So I'm really long Tesla. Okay. I just don't like that there's no, some differentiator for a Plaid car that's so expensive, Mitch. It's really expensive.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen something that succeed like that.
What's the price tag?
100 and I had it right. 39. Thank you. 131. I heard something about a Mustang, but I don't.
No, we have the Ford something, the loudest engine ever, the Mustang M1. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but Luke has been driving it. He won't, it's too loud for me, said. I'm like, dude, there's probably a way you can lower the volume. All right, so I'm still long AMC. I'll go with that. Then
right. What other stock?
And then you guys know FGF and BTN are two of my favorites. FGF and BTN.
FGF.
FGF. I mean, I told this FGF. It will be over 10 within the next 2 weeks. Okay. I still like, and I know I've been wrong. It's not to say that I've been right. I still like, and I'm going to use the tagline, 6 and 60. So SIX.
Oh, the Six Flags.
Yep.
Great reopening play.
Except yeah, so, it looks like it's priced in or something. I don't know.
It's been bad, Mitch. I'm down $3,000 on it, but I'm down 7% on it, but in the options I'm down 90%. But Six Flags, I have this tag 6 and 60. So I'm saying by mid August, Six Flags is at 60. It's kind of like what you guys were talking about earlier today with the cruise ships. You know what I mean? Like the cruise ships. And what should you buy them or what have you? Mm-hmm. I think Six Flags is going to see insane demand, absolutely insane demand. So
what about Fun? See your point.
Yeah, Fun's another one, Spencer. I didn't like the valuation as much on it versus Six Flags, but you can play that too. You're probably safe in my book. But just so we're clear, I have sucked it up. I mean, I'm down. On the options of Six Flags, I'm down 90%. And on the stock of it, I'm down 7%.
Yeah, so. Wasn't Six Flags the one that said they were going to run out of money last year? I remember there was some stuff about Six Flags' debt load. I vaguely remember this last summer.
No,
I like this Fun chart.
You do?
Yeah, I actually like the chart.
So I got the wrong one you're trying to tell me?
I mean, just technicals, man. You got to – I know that you're always a story and fundamentals guy. Yep, just try to get it off of support. Your timing sometimes is just – you rush into the trade. That's all it is, but you usually end up in the green.
Okay, and then the other one that I have been buying in size is Caesars, CZR.
Yes. That's a good one. I like that.
And then the one that hasn't really moved yet, guys, and I still think you can get in and be profitable, is Wynn. Put the Wynn in Wynn, W-Y-N-N. I want to see everyone put the Wynn in Wynn because you guys are all winners. Zinger Nation are all winners. Even the guys that hate me and be disgusted, you know, I just don't like to see people's shows cut short. It really makes me sad.
All right. So, Jaden Rasnick is the founder.
But no, you can't cut me off yet. I have to do my signature thing every time I'm on, Mr. Spencer. Don't do it yet.
Signature.
Okay. What's on your head?
I'm waiting for you. Don't worry about it.
Popcorn.
It's my popcorn bucket. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the signature.
I got it. I'm just waiting to be quiet. As always, if you're a listener to this show.
All right. That's the fun. Jason Rasnick is the founder of
as always, if you like the show and you think you know, you want to see more of us, let E-Trade know. So please do that. And we'll send you swag. We have a lot of swag in the office. If we can put on the camera in the back, if you guys want Benzinger swag, you want anything Benzinger related, we'll send it to you. So email powerhour@benzinga.com. Email SpencerIsrael@benzinga.com. Wish him happy birthday. Powerhour@benzinga.com. If you want Benzinger swag, let those brokerages know that you love us or what have you. Or don't love us. I don't know. Either way.